Hello, and welcome to Make It Clear, a conversational podcast about all things related to water and wastewater. I'm your host, Angela Bounds, and I'm joined by my co-host, Sean Rapp. In each episode, we'll tackle a relevant topic with facts and expert opinions and make things clear.
Hello, and welcome back. Thanks for joining us again. Today, Sean and I are here, of course, as usual. Joining us today, we've got Corey Lyon and Aaron Yates. They're both on our sales team. Both of them are very well-versed in the topic we're going to discuss today. We're going to be talking about vacation homes. So, hi, Corey.
Good morning.
Hi, Aaron.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here, guys. Let's jump in. So, First of all, for the listeners, let's go ahead and define what we mean by vacation home.
That's a great question, Angela. That can mean a lot of things depending on what people are doing,
right?
Especially post-COVID, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a big trend we've seen is people getting in and out of the short-term rental market a lot more frequently and by that, what I mean is putting their home or property on that short-term rental market.
Right.
More frequently and back and forth, whereas traditionally things seem to be more seasonal. You know, that classic John Candy lake house up in northern Michigan.
Yeah.
That's still there, but that's now one amongst multiple situations that people have where they're renting out properties of different kinds.
Right. And I guess that's a really good way to put it. We, in the industry, we've always called them vacation homes, right? It's always, as long as I've been in the industry, that's what the types of homes that we're talking about have been called. But now they're short-term rentals. We think of them as, you're looking at Airbnbs, Vrbos, like whatever platform you use. But instead of just being vacation homes, like you were saying, the John Candy house on the lake, short-term rentals are much more prevalent nowadays.
Yeah, I think that's an important distinction because a lot of people probably still think of vacation home as that second home that somebody with a large income owns somewhere else, you know, that they go to for a week or two out of the year.
Right.
That definition has definitely changed. So, yeah, it's good to know that.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about how short-term rentals or vacation homes vary.
Oh, how much time do you have?
I know.
There can be a lot of different ones. Maybe we can tackle this geographically. Like, Aaron, you want to talk about some of the kinds of vacation home profiles you see in the Western region, and then I can maybe chime in about the Midwest and the Northeast a little bit.
So I cover primarily California, and we see quite the variety of homes. We've got the Stinson Beach, you know, weekend getaway home for the uber wealthy. From the Bay Area. And then we've also got the mountain retreat, you know, up around like Lake Tahoe in the Sierras. So we've got a lot of very high peak usage weekend type home. It just runs the whole gamut. And then Southern California, you've got Malibu and all of those homes that they're either full-time occupancy or I'm assuming it's because it's the uber wealthy that they're just part-time usage.
Right. And they vary in size.
Oh, they do. So, you know, your mountain cabins, you know, can be literally that, but your Stinson Beach home is not a mountain, you know, a mountain cabin. Those are big.
Yeah, on the beach. Right.
Yeah.
They may have full-time staff, right?
Yeah.
A lot of them do. You know, there'll be housekeepers that are there and, you know, all the things that go with the, you know, the cleaning supplies and all that.
And the entertainment events and so forth, right?
Oh yeah. Lots of entertainment.
Yeah. So to add to what you're saying or sharing there, Aaron, you know, in the Midwest, you see a lot of homes around lake areas or rivers. Places where people want to get away for slightly longer stretches, but it's maybe the weekend to a week or two. Or maybe like this winter, you know, people are out riding their sleds snowmobiling, right? And they've got a crew of 20 guys and they're all in a 4-bedroom house bunking up like a dude ranch for a weekend.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there can be variations there too, where, you know, maybe it's not a black tie affair, but there's a lot of folks there for a very short period of time using a wastewater system.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when you interject the waterway being nearby, you know, whether it's a lake or river, that adds to the performance level that's needed. And of course, there's also more traditional vacation homes, like there's homes in, you know, the Poconos and various mountain areas where people like to get out just to see the fall colors, so to say, or mm-hmm. get away from the metro areas. And then, of course, there's the more traditional vacation or rental homes in places like Vermont, right. where, you know, you're 20 minutes away from a ski resort and you're renting right. it for a week or something. So mm-hmm. there's definitely quite a bit of variation mm-hmm. and how those businesses essentially interact with their customers too. That's the other right. thing, is the expectations can be quite a bit different.
Right. Well, and not everybody treats a vacation rental or short-term rental like it's their own.
Right.
All right. So what are the design considerations?
California is a very still prescriptive market.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, a 3-bedroom home is still, they have a design flow that they have to design to, except usually it's not a 3-bedroom. It'll be like an 8-plus bedroom house.
Right.
And so they're, mm-hmm. and they're also not just the design flow, but the amount of emergency storage that we have to account for
mm-hmm.
is, you know, because of, especially now, because of seasonal power outages due to you know, wildfire danger.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all the things that come with that.
So are the regulations different for short-term rentals, or if it's a 4-bedroom home, is it just 4-bedroom home regs as opposed to a 4-bedroom home that has 4 bunk beds in one of the rooms?
From what I've seen, they're still the same. There's no distinction between the two.
Hmm.
That's really true of a good portion of North America.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few exceptions where if like there's a zoning restriction
mm-hmm.
that essentially affects how many people per bedroom they can have in a mm-hmm. home or property. But usually there's no regulations on the infrastructure or wastewater side that affects that.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally you might have a property that's on an operating permit where they're like, you cannot exceed this maximum design flow.
Right.
So far, the only, and there, I'd love to hear from our listeners if there's a jurisdiction out there that accounts for this, but I only know of one jurisdiction that accounts for rental specifically in their language, and that's in Vermont.
Mm.
In section 1-803, they actually call out rental applications as having a higher expectation of people per bedroom beyond a yeah. certain number of bedrooms.
Well, I was
oh,
thinking,
that's interesting.
I mean, I can't tell you the number of times that we've rented, personally rented, and a short-term rental and had a kid sleeping on a couch.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Or you see the 3-tier bunk beds in yeah. more than one bedroom, right?
Yeah. And a lot of times, even when you're looking on the sites for, you know, how many people can sleep in this home, they count couches in, you know, if it has a living room and a family room, it's probably going to say that you can sleep 4 more people. Because they'll have 2 couches in each of those.
And a rollaway.
And a rollaway. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So you definitely need to take that into consideration if you know that the house is going to be a short-term rental. So what technology is best for a short-term rental?
Well, that's a great question, Angela. If we step back and look at what's the profile, you know, what does the application need? It needs to be able to handle extremes between low flows, nominal flows that it's expected on a normal basis, as well as be able to handle peak flows, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're asking it to be able to do a lot. Preferably, you also want it to be resilient in terms of treatment, where if those events happen, everything's still, for the most part, from a treatment perspective, still performing very well. You mm-hmm. don't want big upsets or swings in hydraulic surges that are unexpected or biological upsets where you get blow through the system, right?
Right.
I think that's an application where a packed bed media filter like Advantex, where we're operating it in that mode where we're essentially starving the biology.
Mm-hmm.
You combine that with that recirculation blend tank and the smart controls, and you have a really mm-hmm. good 3-point combo like a pincer movement for these applications. So just for, it's the same reason why Vantex is so good at schools or campgrounds, is you have that variable flow that's always being buffered out, and you have the controls that can manage things if things really get
crazy.
Wild with the swings.
Yeah.
And it's quiet. It doesn't bother the people who probably don't even know what a wastewater system might be. They're there for the weekend, right?
Right. Last thing that you want is for that alarm to be going off. How do right. I...
What's that loud fan over there?
What's that sound? All right. So what about maintenance? So what do you need to consider when maintaining a short-term rental or vacation home? Is standard maintenance going to be enough?
So I get a lot of questions from operators, especially regarding timer settings for mm-hmm. their treatment system.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my general recommendation to them is that you set the average timer settings based upon when they're not there.
Okay.
And you set the override settings based upon the peak flow, so that when sure. when the, you know, the guests are there and they bring their extended family, that the system can keep up with the amount of flow that it's seeing. But mm-hmm. we know that if we were to keep those exact timer settings for when no one's there,
mm-hmm.
that the system is going to require a lot more maintenance. There's some filters inside that plug up, you know, especially a biotube for like a standard AX20.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we were to over recirculate that, it would plug up, and if no one's there, it's going to plug up sooner.
Right.
So I tend to balance it between nobody there versus someone's there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So what happens most often when it sits idle and empty for a long period of time?
So at that point, it's just recirculating upon itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our controls, we have smart controls that actually back off the timer settings. And so, you know, I refer to it as vacation mode. You start.
Right.
You start lengthening the amount of time between pump cycles.
Mm-hmm.
So if I set it for, you know, if I go, you know, leave it at our default settings, which is about 150 to 200 gallons a day, it's going to start creeping that out to where, you know, you're doing much, much less than that that gets through the pod.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So would it be beneficial then, because of the cyclical nature of vacancy versus occupancy, to have somebody monitoring the system?
So we have a couple different kinds of controls. So we have our Vericom, which is our monitoring one. And if they have some form of communication at this, like a high-speed internet or a phone line, then absolutely, let the system be monitored, because then the maintenance provider can find out if there is an issue and respond accordingly. You know, if there's no utilities up there, you know, no phone line or no internet connection, which is getting, especially the internet connection is getting rare. You know, even the vacation homes have internet.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, but we do make an MVP line. The only thing is that when there's a problem, the audible goes off. And if no one's there to hear it, or the neighbors hear it and they call the sheriff's department.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it kind of makes sense, because if I was on vacation at this really nice house somewhere, enjoying my time out of my own house, you know, enjoying the scenery and whatnot, last thing I want to hear is an alarm going off somewhere because the system's backed up. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did someone break into the wine cellar and set off a security alarm?
Right. Nope. Just your wastewater system.
Yeah. The monitoring also creates a unique opportunity to get to know not only what your client is telling you, but also the actual usage habits. Because sometimes the business owner doesn't know how a property will do once it's rented, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if it gets heavily used weekend after weekend, it can also be an opportunity to determine, you know, is additional maintenance needed, because you got a lot of people who've never been on an on-site wastewater system, you know, leaving mm-hmm. non-degradable material, you know, wipes and things like that in the system.
Sure.
So it can be an opportunity to kind of check on it to see if it does need more maintenance visits based on that kind of usage, as opposed to a more traditional seasonal summer lake house or something like that, right?
Right.
Sure.
So what happens if the home sells and moves from a vacation rental to a permanent residence?
That's a really good question. If the system is designed properly, it should be able to just roll right into a regular full-time residence because the treatment system is sized appropriately.
Mm-hmm. So let's ask that question in the reverse. If you have a home that you own that you are deciding that you're going to turn into a short-term rental or a vacation home, what happens or what should happen? What are the things that you need to consider if you're going to move your home into a short-term rental situation?
Good question. Hopefully everything is, like I said, is sized appropriately, especially your drain field. You know, the treatment system is modular and can easily expand to accept more flows, but do they have enough property that will take the drain field?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what amount of land do you have? Because once the drain field fails, there's a reason why they have advanced treatment required on this piece of property.
Right.
It's because the soil is either not enough or won't accept the water. Or there's high groundwater in certain areas too. So there's a reason why they have advanced treatment requirements. And oftentimes, especially when you get into some of your smaller lots where they don't have enough land to put their reserve drain field, or they don't have room to expand.
So one of the key things here would be if you're an operator or a practitioner in this industry that's providing maintenance services, have those conversations with your homeowners. Be proactive. Mention it in your newsletter. If you're not doing a newsletter, stuff one in your envelopes that you send out and let them know, hey, if you're thinking about this, we'd love to chat with you. We can help you. Be their support mechanism, because there are a lot of people out there thinking about, hey, I'd love to make some extra cash during, you know, the various seasons of the year. And so it could be an opportunity to add value to your clients as well, you know, help guide them through that journey.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Make sure they understand what it really means. All right. Is there anything else about short-term rental vacation homes that we didn't cover?
Yeah. I'd like to go back to one. We were joking a little bit about the alarm situation, but I think we've seen some of these differences in our own travels, right? Where you get the little placard that says, hey, here's some advice about how to get into the garage. Here's some advice on where to take the bikes that you're renting around the trail. Why not include a placard or some brief instructions on, hey, if your alarm goes off, do this, call these people or call this number.
Oh, yeah.
Or here's some advice on what not to put down the system if you're trying to prohibit wipes or things like that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because a lot of folks will be, you know, not used to having a home that's on that system. And the last thing they want to be to see is to be embarrassed, upset from an alarm going off and having to call somebody or just be disrupted from their vacation, right?
Yeah. And I have seen in Sun River, well, outside of Sun River, in Three Rivers, there we stayed at a rental and they had just that. They had the sheet that said, don't flush anything. If something happens, call this number. Like, if the alarm sounds, don't become alarmed. Just push the button and call this number. Because it was on a septic system. I, of course, went outside and found where the septic system was.
Right. Okay, who among us has not done that? Because
that's what I do when I know. Right. Are you kidding? I drive into communities that I know have our stuff, and I'm literally like walking around restaurants looking for where their tanks are. It's a sickness, I tell you.
I did the same thing at my uncle's house. He was on a septic system. So first time I went there, I went to his garage to go see what kind of panel he had.
I think it's a hazard of the job.
It is.
It very much can be.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Corey and Aaron. It's a pleasure having you. And thanks everybody for listening.
No, thanks for having us on.
We want to thank you again for joining us today. Before you go, don't forget to subscribe where you listen to podcasts so you're notified when new episodes are posted. Also, you can leave your comments or suggestions through the contact link on our website, www.arenco.com. Until next time, have a great day.